Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
This is Jeff Lindsay.
This is Michael Pitt.
Hey, everybody, it's John Dudley from Knock On TV.
Hey, guys, this is Jared Scheffler from Whitetail Adrenaline.
Hi, I'm Taylor Drury from Drury Outdoors.
Hey, this is Nick Munt from Bow Collector.
Hey, this is Melissa Buckman.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
You're listening to the Working Class Bow Hunter. That's right. This is a podcast for Billy Joe Lunchbucket, the working man, just like me and you. My name's Travis T. Bone Turner from The Bone Collector. Thank you for tuning in.
It's really, really not that good.
Coming to you live right here in beautiful Cheese Curdville, Central Wisconsin. Man, we are at HHA right now, headquarters. We're sitting at a table. We're looking at everything. There's wolves, mountain lions. There's a bear den outside, and we are super happy to be recording here. This is the Working Class Bowhunter Podcast. Man, I'm Steve. It's not the studio, so it feels so weird.
I can feel Steve tuckering out.
Oh, no, at the table with us here at HHA, we've got Kurt, Eric, Mark, Scott Bakken, the beautiful, and then we got some other guy who does a podcast over there. Joining a very young man who is very cool. We'll talk about you maybe on an Instagram story. But how's everyone doing?
Good.
Doing good. Thanks for having us, Scott.
Yeah, awesome to be here.
Do you regret having us here yet?
Almost.
Yeah.
Almost. A little bit.
Yeah.
He's got coffee. He's like, man, I should have cracked a beer for this episode.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. His coffee is not strong enough to deal with you for right now.
Well, you're sitting right next to Steve, so yeah. I mean, you know. Yeah. I chose this end of the table to kind of get out of his realm a little bit, you know. Yeah.
I'm afraid he's going to mistake my hand for a chewy granola bar.
Oh, no. Believe me, I know where that bag right is. That's right at my feet.
Steve literally has a bag of like 65 chewy granola bars to his right now.
Kurt gave it to me for my birthday.
Yeah, it was an early Christmas gift. But let's talk about HHA because we're here. And,
we are.
Enough about Steve. We did a podcast, was it earlier in the summer this year?
Yeah.
I can't remember now. We talked about a little bit of the background of HHA and what you guys do and the products and everyone knows that we started working together, and you support us, we support you guys, and we love it. And I think we should go in, maybe refresh a little bit on the company of HHA, and then we can just kind of move on from there.
Yeah, sounds good. So, I mean, obviously we're glad to have you guys on board, and I mean, you haven't ran the company in the ground yet, so I mean, that's a good thing.
Working
but,
on it.
Yeah.
We're trying.
But, no, I mean, it's good. You know, like we really value, you know, our partnerships with people. So, I mean, you guys do a great job and, you know, it's awesome having you guys here and, you know, you guys can see how, you know, what we do and how everything's assembled. But,
Yeah, so just a little background. You know, HHA was started in, 1984 when Harry Hamm founded HHA. And, back then they kind of did a little bit of everything. I mean, the actual optimizer site that everybody knows now didn't really come until 1995-ish. But before then, I mean, they did everything from releases to stabilizers to broadheads to targets. I mean, so they've kind of
experimented with it all.
Yeah, I mean, they've kind of done, a little bit of everything. And, it's funny. We were just talking about earlier, you throw enough darts at a wall, one's going to stick. And, dart was the optimizer.
That's
and
the way I live my life.
Yeah, I know, right?
Every morning.
Every morning.
I live mine a quarter mile at a time.
Vin Diesel.
Well, we were out there, and we got to see some of the, I guess it's kind of the history of HHA display case. Yep. And out there with the new booth and everything that you guys have. And can I talk about the new booth?
Sure.
Yeah. But it looks good. And I don't know, it's just cool to see that stuff. It's something.
It's cool to see the stuff progress over the years, where it started and then to where it's at now.
Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah, the car garage, I mean, that's like the HHA, time capsule. And yeah. I mean, it's pretty cool. I mean, not only the history of HHA, but I mean, just to kind of look back at the old family photos. And
yeah.
I mean, that's one thing that, and everybody will kind of see it, in 2017, as far as like our catalog and stuff, is we really kind of went back to try to like push the family values and stuff like that. And I mean, HHA is kind of, I mean, when you look at, the company and the products and stuff, I mean, they were all based on, the family who hunted together. And I mean, that was how they spent time is, they all hunted together. And even to this day, Harry obviously doesn't do much hunting anymore, but the boys still do. And it's just there's not a lot of companies anymore that still carry the family values, and that this is where we came from and this is how we got started. So
yeah, you can just tell it's like a family environment around
here. Super humble because we're in basically we're at the house.
Yeah,
in the basement right now, and the whole operations ran down here. Well, most of the operation, not all of it, but
yeah, I mean 75% of it. But I mean the other 25% is done at the machine shop, was just, a couple miles down the road. But yeah, I mean, it was kind of, and it's, again, that's kind of like a lot of people don't know it. Well, hardly anybody does because it's never really, been exposed. But I mean, so Harry, when he started HHA, he was, fell sick at a fairly young age and has been, confined to a scooter ever since. So, he doesn't get around like, a lot of us do, but yet, I mean, despite the challenges that, life threw at him, he still, pulled through and now has, now HHA, which is a very successful company.
Right.
So it's kind of, and again, you kind of lose sight of that. I mean, even I do, sitting at my desk every day and stuff. So, I mean, taking a trip to the garage every now and then, it just kind of
brings back
and it's like, holy cow, here's a guy that overcame, some pretty serious stuff that a lot of people probably would have just shriveled up and said, I quit.
Right.
He fought through it, and now, HHA is still here, and we're still rocking and, getting bigger and bigger. So
It's very cool. I mean, this is a very cool area up here. I mean, when we've got, where we're from, it's a little bit different, when just driving up here, we're looking at, the timber and just like the layout of how Wisconsin's set up, it's like you go from nothing to like a town. And, I remember the last time you told us, like, this is a community, everybody knows HHA, and it's just like, it's just, you have to be friendly with everybody because you ain't got nobody else for miles around. And it's just a very interesting layout up here. And then, when we rolled up, you're like, yeah, you're going to roll up to a house, and this is where it is.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not kidding me. It's a house, but, you come downstairs, and it feels like a basement turned into a shop because that's exactly what it is.
Yep.
So, if you're here working every day, it feels like you're working from home,
Absolutely.
Well, and that's – I mean, we joke about it because – you guys visiting or other people that visit, they're expecting to see this big, fancy, building and office and stuff. And yeah, we could go and do that and, dump a ton of money into a fancy, corporate office, but that's not,
you don't need it.
No,
why? Yeah.
No, being confined to, a smaller space like we have, it has its challenges and, obviously as you grow, you got to expand, but I mean, for the most part, we can knock everything out right here. And that's one thing. We never necessarily say that HHA is better than anybody because, the bottom line is, customers and, archers. They can choose whatever they want.
I mean, I'll say it though.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying, you know, yeah, I mean, I guess I could say we are better, but at the same time, I mean, we're not the only site out there, you know.
Yeah.
People don't have to shoot our stuff, but having such a small, like, kind of tight knit, you know, work environment, that's all part of, you know, being able to control the product flow. So,
right.
You know, that's one thing that we do hang our hat on is the fact that, you know, we do have so much control on the quality of our products. So, yep. I mean, literally before any site gets packaged, it's inspected. It gets hand-inspected with a fine-tooth comb.
Right.
And, you know, if we do run into an issue, we can take care of it right away because everything is done here, you know. So we're not having to call a, you know, a factory in China or,
yeah.
I mean, even a factory on the other side of the United States.
Right.
Yeah, everything is just right here, and we can have it fixed usually that same day.
Right.
You know, like if we need to refine a part, we just call the machine shop and say, hey, we're running into this issue, and generally that afternoon they can knock out a new piece, and we try it, and if it's right, then we roll with it. So,
well, one thing we talk about a lot on the episodes when we talk about you guys is the warranty, and that's what's awesome is, I mean, you guys back your product, and it's really an HHA site could be the last archery site you ever buy.
Yep.
Absolutely.
And that's a really strong selling point, especially for the guy who, some people get new equipment every year, some do it every couple of years. Some guys buy their equipment and keep it for 15 years, and, you know, yeah, spend the money, get a good quality product, and you can keep it forever.
Right. Yeah, and that is one thing. I mean, you know, the two main parts of, like, our business that we really, really strive is obviously the quality of the product, but customer service is, I mean, I would say it's probably more important than the quality, even though, I mean, obviously we're not going to put out a subpar product, but, I mean, that is one thing that we strive for is just customer service, and we're always trying to be better and better. But yeah, I mean, we get stuff sent back to us, you know, from literally like 1995. I mean, we've literally have seen some of the original optimizers get sent back because the pin fiber broke or something like that. And we may not, you know, those scope housings were completely different than what we use now. So like we may not be able to return the site like it was because, I mean, obviously that's a, you know, whatever.
What do you do? Give them a new site and just send the old one back to them too? Or?
It all depends. I mean, it's just situational.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not just going to like be like, all right, well, your site's useless here. Have a new one, you know, but I mean, we'd say, you know, this is what we're running into. How would you like us to proceed? But 99% of the time we can take care of it.
Yeah. Man, that's awesome. Yeah. That's crazy.
And it's kind of funny because, I mean, we get obviously warranty. I mean, you see all kinds of stuff. But, I mean, it's kind of a no questions asked. Like, I mean, it's our warranty. It's our, you know, we strive to provide the best service. So, you know, if something happens, we'll back it.
Well, that's the thing. I guess, I don't know if you want to look at it. You're not really going to lose money if you put out a quality product like you're saying. But then guys or gals, whoever buys the product and something happens, you guys take care of it. Then you know, with a company like that, you'd stick with it. And I find, we talk about all the time on the podcast, that the hunting industry, when it comes to gear, whatever it may be, is all word of mouth is really strong in our industry. So if, you know, Eric, something happens, your HHA or something, and you need to get it fixed, it gets taken care of, boom, he's going to tell me, man, this company worked with me, they're awesome, and it's a good product, and that goes a long way.
Well, and especially, I mean, from like a business standpoint, I mean, the expense of replacing a product for someone versus not taking care of them. I mean,
that could ruin a company.
I mean, you're talking about, you know, maybe at the end of the year, a couple $1,000s in replacement parts. But if you didn't do that, I mean, you could be talking about, you know, several $1,000s in loss of sales because you didn't take care of somebody. And it's just simple, you know.
And that's where it comes back to word of mouth. You know, some guy says, oh, their customer service wasn't that good. Then he's going to tell everyone.
Yep.
Let's talk about the shirts, the military shirts or the veteran shirts.
Yeah.
So that was one thing we've always been asked was for HHA logo wear, and we never really had anything until this year. So now we have a full line of HHA logo wear. But one thing that is really exciting is we did,
Eric's rocking it right now.
I got one on, but I'm hiding it. But so we did develop a military kind of focused shirt. And it has one of our new hashtags that we've been using, which is hashtag HHAUSA. So that's another thing that we're really, you know, outside of like really promoting the family values part, you know, the fact that everything is USA made. So if anybody's on like our social media and stuff like that, you'll see, you know, HHA USA or USA. I mean, we're really, really pushing that.
Mm-hmm.
But so, yeah, so the military shirt, the whole idea with that is we do offer a military discount, you know, whether you're active duty or, you know, retired service members. So along with that, offering the shirt, a percentage of the proceeds from the sales of the military shirt go into a kitty that we have set aside. And same with any site that's sold through the military discount, all the proceeds from that go into that same kitty. And then the ultimate goal is we're going to have this pot of money that we're going to give back to some sort of, you know, military, you know, organization, you know, or that's helping veterans out. You know, we've talked about maybe partnering with a group and doing some, you know, vet hunts or something like that. So we don't really know exactly what the end goal of that is yet. We're still working on that. Mm-hmm. But right now our main priority is just to build that kitty just so we can eventually, you know, donate it back. So
that's awesome, man.
But yeah, so like, again, you know, the proceeds from the, military shirt as well as the military discount all go towards that kitty. So, and I think, I mean, I think the military shirt looks pretty cool too. So
it does. Our buddy Gene Miller, he got one and it was just one of the coolest
things. That's our veteran shout out for this episode.
Yes, it is. And, you know, it's super cool that you guys do that. I mean, you know, you talk about family and, you know, giving a little bit back for the guys who, you know, always go and sign that blank check. You know, it's just so refreshing to find a company that's just so good to everybody and, you know, doing so good and then putting out a quality product. I mean, you know, you guys are doing a little bit more than a lot of other companies for vets too. Not only just the shirts, but, you know, you were telling us you now partnered with the Warrior Games, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And that's awesome. I mean, that's huge. I think that's super cool. If you want to talk about that a little bit.
Well, yeah. And I mean, the whole military in general, I mean, you can't say enough about, you know, the men and women in our military. I mean, honestly, if it wasn't for them and what they do, none of us would be able to do what we do.
We wouldn't be sitting here right now.
Yeah, we'd be doing this podcast in Russian probably.
Right. Well, it's like, I wish we could, you know, give back to everybody, you know, even more than the military, because then we all know there's plenty of people out there that need help. But the men and women in the military, I mean, they're over there, I mean, just beating their heads against, you know, Wolf, and, you know, they may not know why they're over there or whatever, but then when they come home, it's like, all right, well, what do we do now? You know? So it's like, I mean, you just, I
feel, take
I mean,
care of them.
And I mean, I wish we could do more because, you know, a discount and, you know, a couple $1,000s in a bank account to give back. I mean, it seems, I wish there was more we could do, but so going back to the Warrior Games thing, one thing, we did partner up with, a couple guys that participated in the Warrior Games in the Army this summer. And so a couple of us went to West Point, New York to actually watch the Warrior Games in the particular, the archery. And it was, it was awesome. And we made a whole video that you can still find on our website and stuff. And
how many guys were shooting?
It was all branches of the military. So, because every year they change it. So like the Army hosted it, you know, last year, and then this year it's going to be in Chicago. And
can anyone go and watch that? Is that how it works, or do you have to be?
No, it's I think it's an actual like invite. Oh, okay. We got invited by these guys that we had partnered with.
Mm-hmm.
To see and to like hear those guys like and what they'd been through, and a lot of them, you know, were wounded veterans,
right?
And just to hear how archery is, you know, a way of for them to, you know, mentally unwind.
It's like a meditation almost.
Yeah,
in a way.
And I tell you, those guys are freaking phenomenal shots too. I mean,
I bet.
I mean, I would.
You imagine the stressful situations they've been in.
Oh, like, I know.
I can do anything.
Oh yeah, yeah. Shooting at a target. I was a scout sniper, dude. Yeah, no, you can. No, I wasn't, but I'm saying that these guys. You know,
we know, Steve.
I can't concentrate that much, man. Those guys.
The bag of granola bars just says it all.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The heavy breathing. We got it.
Yeah. No. I don't know what branch I'd be in.
Camp cook. But so that was it. Truly was like a very humbling and eye opening experience. So after leaving that, we all said, "All right, like we're doing this. Like we need to, you know, we need to do something." And I mean, they're just awesome. So we're gonna go back again this year, and we're working on. I pretty sure it has been finalized, but it sounds like we actually might be the official site sponsor for the Warrior Games. So
that's awesome.
Next year, everybody shooting in the archery portion of it should be shooting in HHA.
That's good. That's so cool. Amazing. What time of year is it roughly?
It's right around. I think it's just shortly after the 4th of July.
Oh, okay.
Yep. I can't remember exactly what time of year it was, but I think it's right around then.
Wonder if they'd let us into podcast. I'll be traveling for work probably that time,
yeah,
but
you'll probably be gone.
We could try it.
Doesn't mean we can't do it.
That's right. Hey,
we can handle it.
Scott, you can take over.
Yeah. We're good to go.
Scott's in charge now.
Can't do any worse than we do.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, we just take this podcast, put it right down on the dirt. That's what we try to do every episode. And
it's like the Titanic just ran that thing into an iceberg.
Yep. That's right. We try
every episode.
But, well, so the military deal, I mean, that's a direction where it can continue to, I mean, not that we're going to become, you know, a military focused company, but it's just, I mean, you can't do enough.
Any little bit helps, right. man. Yeah, and absolutely. That's the thing. Like, we support the Dark Horse Lodge a lot. It's like a retreat for combat veterans. And we talk about, just to support them, even though it's just a small fraction, you can go to smile.amazon and type in and select the Dark Horse Lodge. So any purchase you're going to make anyway, if you select that, what's the percentage that goes to your foundation?
Oh, dude, it's like, so yeah, 1%, I looked it up. It's like 0.1% or something like that. Maybe it is like 1%. It's not like a super huge amount, but.
Yeah, but stuff you would have bought anyway.
Stuff you would have bought anyway, yeah, it goes right to them. So, I mean, it's cool, man. You know,
any little bit helps, and yeah, we appreciate everything our veterans do. I don't know. I get all like worked up like seeing like wounded veterans. It like really, I don't know. I don't want to get too into it because this will get too serious here.
We'll get way off track. If we get into that.
Yeah, but it's just like anything you can do to help them out, and that's what we're planning on doing with our Working Class Bowhunter shoot in the spring. Is raising money and to probably donating to the Dark Horse Lodge is probably what we'll do.
Well, and it's funny you bring that up because one thing we're working on for next summer is hosting three 3D tournaments locally here. One's actually, there's a an archery club just right down the road here that we're going to team up with and hold a shoot there. And then there's another one up in Wausau, which is just 40 minutes from us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be like military veteran based.
That's
3D
awesome.
Shoots. So we're going to hopefully partner, you know, with a lot of our contacts in the industry and stuff like that and offer, you know, prizes and all the proceeds are going to go towards,
awesome.
You know,
we'll have
this,
to come
this,
up for that.
Yeah, that would be awesome if you guys came up. There's going to be three of them. So
keep in mind, guys, when you come up here, there are lions, wolves,
tigers,
and bears. Oh, my. Mountain lions. You guys got it all running. So, yeah, if you want to go shoot a 3D course.
Oh, Scott's Steve up and down right now.
That,
he's like,
dude, is that wolf coming quick? No, you guys, I'm not going out in them woods. Like, I have to have an escort.
Do you actually, like, go outside and hunt, or do you just, like.
Yeah, because we don't got wolves where I'm at.
Scott, he's a puss.
You will eventually.
Sooner or later.
The thing is, like, Steve's not really, like, the. You know, he's not an athlete by any means.
No, not by any means. Well, a food athlete, probably. A competitive eater.
You know, I always thought I would be good at that because I can eat, like, really, really fast. But yet, I really do not want to shove 100 hot dogs in my mouth.
You should have watched Stevie to TV dinner last night.
Oh, my Atlanta.
Hotel. It was disgusting.
Why did you eat a TV dinner?
Because they were selling them in the hotel lobby.
This is going off the rails, boys.
It is. Real fast, too.
All right, back to the focus. But, 3D tournament here. And actually, you know what, though? Like, in all seriousness, in this timber, that'd be, like, really cool to shoot.
Mm-hmm. It'd be different from than what we're used to at home.
It would be cool.
Yeah. Yep. So, and actually, the one up in Wausau, that's kind of a cool area because you get a little bit more elevation, where here it's just flat sand country and stuff. Yeah. So, but yeah, so we're still hammering out the details on that, but that's the goal is to have three archery shoots that, we'll have door prizes and stuff like that, and then all the proceeds will go towards the military.
Yeah, might as well make it an event. That's what we were saying with our shooting.
Yeah, we can donate a couple koozies, or something.
Yeah, they do a bow. They're going to do a bow check. And not all sites welcome.
Yeah, you have to shoot an HHA to get in.
Hey,
and we will not be handing out free sites if you don't have one.
Yeah, exactly. They'll be for sale, and we'll have that little little card reader thing that you can plug in the iPad.
Chip.
Yeah, the chip. Yeah. For sale right there.
Jeez. I think that'll be cool. Do you know any rough dates for those for three? I imagine scattered
It's literally like we're still in the developmental stage, and we just started talking with a couple different clubs that would be interested and stuff like that. So, but as soon as we have more information, I mean, we'll be. I mean, we'll be promoting the crap out of it on social media, and obviously we'll let you guys
know.
We'll
talk about it and all that. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely. What else do we want to get into?
Yeah, let's talk about Scott Bakken a little bit more.
He's Scott, like the man behind the mic.
Yeah, why? Because you're here.
Oh, okay.
So,
you're like the model for the website.
Read the fine print.
Exactly. I do want to talk about what you guys have been doing on social media just like really recently. You know, it kind of ties back into like the whole family, but you've been doing like these little like pictures of just individuals at work and just kind of a little background story. I mean, what is that something that's going to continue in the future for you guys, social media wise? I mean, you know, because it's very cool to always look into a company and see what they do. You know, you want to see how they operate, and it's just
kind of like the behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Thing.
Yeah, you're like showing like someone that runs like the CNC or doing machines, whatever they do in their position, and
Bob
like,
and.
Yeah, Bob's a celebrity now, man. I mean, like when his photo hit Facebook, like he had the most comments out of like any picture that's been posted in the last like 6 months.
Oh, yeah. I don't know why I remember, but I just remember his name tag, Bob.
He's unforgettable. I mean,
that's,
meet the guy
that's
once
Bob and, for you.
Yeah, Bob. Like when you see Bob, he just like that's like Central Wisconsin. Like that's what a Central Wisconsin man looks like.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing he was missing is some like, you know, like hot sauce on his.
Shirt
and a liney's in his hand or something like that, you know. But yeah, Bob's I mean, he's the real deal. I mean, that dude is Bob is our basically our shop foreman, and I mean, there's nothing that guy can't do. I mean, he's
Bob.
I mean, yeah, he's like Tim the Tool Man Taylor of HHA. Seriously, I mean, there's like that dude can fix anything, and Bob is, I mean, he's just a stand-up guy. Like, you can't say enough good about him. But so one thing, you know, the HHA, it's well, as you guys kind of mentioned, you know, with the being out of the house and stuff like that, like a lot of what we do is very old school, and you know, a lot of that comes from Harry, because I mean, he had this formula for success that obviously worked,
yeah,
but you know, the formula's, you know, eventually you got to change some things,
right,
and catch
up
to the time,
right.
So we're finally rounding that corner, so we partnered with Josh Preisner, which you guys met, and he owns Blue Goose Visuals, so he's running our social media. And he's basically a social media guru, which none of us here are.
Mm.
And I mean, I don't even have a Facebook account, so like, I just watch ours and that's it.
But, out of the loop.
Yeah, I don't care.
It's a safe spot, man.
Yeah,
I'd say
you ain't missing much.
That way, I don't know what anybody else is doing, and nobody knows what I'm doing. So
absolutely.
But he's done an absolute phenomenal job, you know, running our Facebook and Instagram accounts, and that's one thing you will see a lot more of is, you know, his kind of the way he has it designed is to do put out kind of these series. So like you'll see, you know, part 1 of 10 or part 1 of 12. And obviously, you know, kind of going back, like we're really, really trying to push, you know, the whole, you know, USA made stuff like that. Like, so, you know, everything is made by actual people, you know. So, I mean, it'll show somebody, you know, wrapping the fiber optic around a housing or actually, you know, putting screws into a, you know, speed dial or whatever. So that's one thing he's really been kind of, you know, focusing on recently is just these series showing, you know, actual workers, you know, and what they do. And yeah, we will, I mean, you'll see a lot of that in our new catalog. And I mean, going forward, you'll still see a lot of that. I mean, we're not going to, I mean, pound it to death, but I mean, it is going to be a focus.
It's a tasteful amount. I mean, yeah, people want to see that too.
Absolutely. Yeah. They want to see where it's made and who's making it.
Yep. So yeah.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say too. It's cool to always see like a product that you're into. Because bow hunters are passionate about what they use. And so it's cool. Like, that's probably why guys like, oh, we need some logo wear. Like, people want to show, like, oh, yeah, like I'm wearing the brand I represent. Like, you know, if you shoot a Hoyt or a Matthews or an Elite, you wear that shirt or hat around. You have that sticker on your truck. It's the same thing with any bow hunting product, right. You know.
Well, and like I said before, I mean, like, you know, we're very, you know, appreciative of like the support, you know, our customers and our partners show us and stuff. And it's, you know, they don't have to shoot our site. You know what I mean?
Right.
There's options.
Right.
So it's just, you know, anything we can do to try to, you know, keep people, you know, on the HHA side and, you know, get new customers. And I mean, it's just,
yeah,
you know, it's just part of, you know, like I said, kind of going back to the whole family values thing, you know. It's
absolutely.
Just,
something that I want to get into is because we get a lot of emails and messages on social media about the single pen, and I'm sure we talked about this the last episode, and we try and touch on it here and there, but it's people are really reluctant to move from like a multi pen to a single pen, and that's the biggest thing. Like, well, how do you like the single pen? Well, what if the deer moves? How do you sight it in? Can you go into detail, like explain just how easy it is to sight in the single pen, and then kind of some maybe some situations that you've been where you had a deer at 20 yards, and then all of a sudden now he's at 33 yards. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, if there's just tips and just run over it real quick.
Yeah, I mean, it's I mean, there's definitely that that hesitation, that reluctancy to go from multiple pin to single pin. And I mean, I get it because I've had the same mentality. You know,
years ago. I think we've all been there.
Everyone started multi pin for the most part, right?
Absolutely.
And I mean, now single pins, I mean, not just HHA, but whether it's Spot Hog or Montana Bet Gold, I mean, single pins have never been more popular than they are now. And a lot of that is just, I mean, the bowls are getting faster and more efficient, and you really only need one pin.
Right.
I mean, there's always situation, like, I get it, you know, guys out west, you know, that are, you know, they need the multiple pins, and even, you know, now a multiple pin slider, you know, where you can have your 20, 30, 40, and then you use your 40 pin to go 50, 60, 70, 80 on your dial or whatever. I mean, that is the, you know, we get, you know, quite a few phone calls and emails and stuff asking that exact same question. Like, you know, I want to switch to a single pin, but what if I'm hunting and, you know, a deer's coming in at 25, and all of a sudden it jumps back to 40. What do you do? You know, do you let down your bow and change your dial or whatever you do? And it's it's kind of, I mean, it's a legit, like,
it's worry. A concern.
Because,
it's
I mean, it does happen. You know what
it's
I mean?
It's a legit scenario.
But at the right. same time, it's like, you know, if you're worried about it, why don't you practice for it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
So what my recommendation is, and we made a video on this. It's not an idea that we came up with. Actually, it was in a magazine I read. And, but it's basically finding, they call it finding your, maximum point blank range. And basically what you're doing is you're finding the sweet spot on your sight. So whether it's a, you know, an Opti Light or an Ultra, you know, if you have the slide or a dial, but at what yardage mark can you cover the most yardage range without having to move it? And so basically what I did is I took a 3D target and I taped off like what I would consider a kill zone. So it's about an 8-inch kill zone. So I put a, you know, a tape along the top of the lungs, and I put a tape along, you know, the bottom of the heart, where if an arrow were to hit there, it's a killing shot. And I mean, maybe it's a little smaller than 8 inches, but that's what I worked with. But so I started off at 5 yards with my sight set at 20 yards on my sight. And I shot 5 yards, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40 with my sight at 20. So with my sight set at 20 yards, I would aim at the top line just because, you know, of the, you know, your line of sight and the trajectory of the arrow. And, then I shot from 5 to 40, and then I basically measured what the impact range was from my very first arrow to my very last arrow. And it was like 19 inches or something like that. And actually at 40 yards with my sight set at 20, aiming at the top line, I was like 9 inches below the target. I mean, I was missing the deer completely.
Right.
So then I did that exact same thing with my sight set at 30, did 5 to 40 yards aiming at the top line. And I think my impact range was like 15 inches or something like that. But I was still missing the deer low at 40 yards aiming at the top line. So then I put my sight at 40 yards and started at 5 yards and worked back. But this time I aimed at the bottom line just because with your sight set at 40, your line of sight and the trajectory to arrow, they kind of do some goofy things. And so then I did that, and actually my impact range was like 7 inches and every single arrow landed in the kill zone. So by doing that, I learned that if I leave my sight set at 40, whether I'm at 5 yards or 40 yards, I don't have to touch it. I just aim at the bottom of the kill zone. So now when I hunt, you know, I get in my stand or whatever, and I range find everything around me, and I know that wherever the 40-yard boundary is, anything within there, I don't have to touch my sight at all.
Well, right. Now, what I like, too, is, you know, you can, you know, your longest shot, and if you're in the timber, whatever, say it's 35 yards, I always set it at 30, and on the kingpin light, they got the stop on there. So if it comes into 20, you don't even have to look at it. Just hit it right to that stop.
Yep.
So that's a cool feature they got.
Yeah, the blind 20, and that's exactly what that is for.
Right.
You know, so if you know, if your longer shot is going to be 35 yards, just set your dial in 35 yards, just anticipating that. But then if a deer comes out at 20, you just don't even have to look. You just spin it until it stops.
Just roll it.
And obviously, I mean, my preferred method is if I can get the exact range, I turn my wheel or my slide to the exact yardage. But
yeah,
I mean, during the rut, I mean, deer running around, like,
you got to make a move and
right
do
exactly
it quick.
So I leave that. Doing that particular test, my setup was 40 was my sweet spot.
That's a good tip.
I even took it one step farther, and I left my sight at 40 and went 40, 45, 50, 55. And even I think 53 yards was my cutoff to where I could aim at the top of the deer along the deer's back, mm-hmm. and I was still sinking arrows in the kill zone. But then when I got past like 53 yards, then the arrows started missing the target. So right. So legitimately with my sight set at 40, from 5 to 53 yards, I never had to touch it.
It's just like anything, though. You got to practice with it. You got right. these guys that got all these pins. You got to practice gap shooting too.
Exactly.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, you—that's a great point you just made. I love that idea.
And that's it. It just comes. You just got to practice, you know. Yeah. But I mean, you know, it's funny because I always told people that, but I was like, well, you just got to practice. I'm like, I don't even do that. So then once I read this article about this test, I'm like, dang, that's a really good idea. And yeah. So like I said, we did make a video showing that entire mm-hmm. test, and it is on our website. So if anybody wants to
find
watch
that and
it,
share that on our yep. share it on our website and our yep. social media. But one thing I do, and that's a great idea, I'm actually going to experiment with that. I just live by my rangefinder.
Yeah.
It's on my neck, ready to rock. And I know it's a pain in the ass sometimes, like, oh no, he's back 5 more yards or whatever. Mm-hmm. But like I told the story about the buck I shot this year, he was on the trail to come in at 30. And he beelined straight towards me, and he came into 6 yards. So I had my rangefinder range where he was going to be at 30. Then I'm like, oh, he's coming in, and he was under 20. Mm-hmm. So I just left my sight on 20 yep. and shot him at 6 yards.
And that's, I mean, like, so if, you know, with my sight set at 40, say he was coming on the 40-yard trail, and all of a sudden just, you know, made a beeline right toward me. I'm like, holy crap, he's going to be right in my lap. Mm-hmm. Then, I mean, I just put the pin right on his armpit, right on the heart.
And yeah,
right. It's not going to fly that far, so it's not going to matter that much.
Right, right. And actually, Brian, who's our VP of engineering, he's also one of the owners. Him and I were talking about that because he asked me the same question,
mm-hmm.
and asked me about this test that I did. And so he actually went and did it, and like his sweet spot was, I think, like 33 yards or 35 yards, something yeah. like that. Mm-hmm. But he did the exact same test.
What bow are you shooting in, like, poundage-wise? That way people can kind of
get an idea.
Maybe know where to start.
I mean, it depends.
What do we got going on? There's a robot in here?
R2-D2 over there. Well,
the phones are actually supposed to be shut off. So.
And they're calling, hey, we're here in this podcast yeah. somehow. We want to yeah. know more.
Let us in. We want to be part of it.
Hey, answer a phone. Let's see who it is. Live on air. No. You'll get to hear customer service.
Domino's Pizza. You.
Yeah, exactly. We're here.
I mean, I have a couple different bow setups, but it just turned out like I have a Elite Impulse, I have a Hoyt, I have an Obsession, I have a Matthews. I mean, but it turns out that all of them ended up being about the exact same.
So probably with your poundage and draw.
Yeah, I mean they're all 65 to 68 pounds, and I shoot the same arrows out of all of them. It's just
yeah.
Some 1 week I'll shoot one better, and then I won't shoot it good anymore. So then I pick up the other one, and that one's shooting good. And then as soon as that one's not shooting good, then I pick up another one. And
what sight do you run?
I use the Kingpin Hunter Edition on most of my setups, but then I do shoot the Tournament Edition.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly, my favorite one that we make is the Optimizer Ultra.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that sight's going on. I think we've had that one out like 10 years now, and it still is. I mean, it's one of our top performers. The Optimizer Light 5519 is our most popular, but my favorite is the Ultra. I mean, that sight is just it's a bomb-proof sight. The only reason I do like the Kingpin is, you know, cause I do go out west and stuff like that. And the mm-hmm. Kingpin has the second and third axis built right on it.
Yeah. Yep.
Whereas the Light or the Ultra, you have to add the leveling kit, which isn't any big deal, but mm-hmm. the Kingpin, some of the extra features on it are nice, like the blind 20.
Yep.
And then the Kingpin, you can also interchange the wheels. So if you change arrow,
that's
setups,
what I love about
yeah,
it.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. So
that's what I beat up my Kingpin this year, man. I was pulling up my bow, and I was like, my stand's on a washout, and you know how all the tree roots grow out of the washout?
Oh, yeah.
Well, my dovetail, the whole sight got snagged up underneath mm-hmm. one of the roots. I'm pulling, and it was dark. I couldn't really tell what was going on. I'm like, huh. And I don't know why my reaction was to yank on it harder.
Yeah.
And it, like, grab, and then let loose, and then I could see my bow, like, wing from the rope yeah. being tight. I'm like, oh, no.
It was like a bungee jumper, just wing.
I yeah. got up there, I'm like, it seems good, and I went home and shot it after the morning hunt, and it was fine, but, yeah. you know, I'm just like, dang it, man, I can't be doing that.
Well, and, I mean, that's the other thing. Like, I mean, everybody makes fun of me because I say it, because, like, but I mean, some of the sites that we get sent back for, like, warranty work and stuff, I mean, literally look like they went through a meat grinder.
That
I mean,
bad?
Like, I mean, if you looked at mine, I mean, I'm brutal on my equipment. Like, I do not take care of my stuff at all. But, I mean, it's just cool because, I mean, it means that they're being used, right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And that is one thing. You know,
you're putting them to the test.
Well, yeah, and you know, that's one thing again that we kind of hang our hat on is the fact that like our tolerances are so tight. Like, I mean, they are extremely tight to where like, you know, we were talking earlier. You know, we get questions where you know people ask, you know, can I film, you know, dip my sight to match my camo stuff, and you can't because I mean you can't even spray paint them because just that extra little extra material will not it our sights will not work because the tolerances are so tight. But I mean it's exactly that situation, or like I mean if you're hiking up and down a mountain and you get stuck in tag alders, I mean that was like when I was elk hunting in Idaho this year, I mean the mountain we were on was just it was non-stop tag alders. It was like, and once you get in that stuff, I mean you'll spend all day trying to get out of it, but like it you get it, everything gets hung up on it. And that was, I was using a tournament edition kingpin for my elk trip. And that freaking dovetail like
sticks just, off there.
Oh my God. Yeah. Like there is, I don't know how many times I was just hurled my bow off the mountain cause it was just getting tangled up on everything. So it was, I got back and, I started kind of assessing the damage of my bow and I'm like, oh man, like this poor thing. And my sight was just all, I mean, marked and nicked up. And I mean, but I mean, you're setting it down on rocks and stuff like that. But I mean, that's,
well, you don't want to have to worry about all that stuff. No, you got to worry about other stuff when you're hunting.
Yeah. But I mean, after spending 12 days doing that, right. I mean, I came back and I was shooting on the range and I was still, I mean, spot on.
Solid,
so I mean, they're meant to take,
I mean, you can tell once you handle them, they're bulletproof.
Yeah.
Especially the little aluminum thing around the,
well, that's the thing
optic.
I always worry about, like, you know, something like a stick or something like that, or like a tree stand peg getting jammed in your housing and taking out your pen and you're done.
Well,
but
I mean, like we talked about the warranty too. I mean, if something breaks, just send it in and we'll fix it. Right. And that's one thing. I mean, we say our warranty, as soon as it shows up here, our turnaround time is 48 hours.
So that's incredible.
Amazing.
As soon as we get the site, you'll have, I mean, it'll be on its way in 2 days. So
yeah, that's incredible.
Yep. But I mean, use it and abuse it. If it breaks, we'll fix it.
It's the thing. I think people are intimidated, like going back to what, you know, people are writing into us. They're intimidated by the way some of the sites look, especially the dovetail. It just looks fancy and it looks like there's a lot going on. There's really not though. And
I mean, I figured it out.
Yeah, I mean, that says,
that says a
like,
lot.
Yeah,
that says a lot.
I slapped it on, and it's, you know, it's a little tricky at first.
But I can
see
where it could be intimidating because there's a lot of screws on here and a lot of adjustments where, you know, someone might. But once you, the instructions are amazing,
but,
too.
Yeah,
by the way.
Can you go over sighting in?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and just real quick, I mean, that's one thing that we do get kind of criticized on is the fact that, I mean, our sights are not the lightest sights out there. So, I mean, they do add a little weight to your bowl, but, I mean, if you're looking at them, I mean, they're a little beefy, but because they're durable. I mean,
but hey, heavy's accurate.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. And I mean, yeah, we could, you know, take a lot of material out of there and stuff like that. But I mean, you smoke on a rock or something, the frame's going to bend and then, you know what I mean? So,
yep.
But, yeah, so as far as the sighting process, it's really the same for all of our sights, whether it's the Optimizer Light or if it's the Kingpin, but, every sight comes with pre-printed yardage tapes. So basically with the way our sight-in process is, you're calibrating the sight to your setup.
Mm-hmm.
So your first step is you'll see like, you know, the TE that Steve's got in his hand, there's a setup tape on the wheel already. So you start off shooting at 20 yards. And let's say at 20 yards on your setup tape, you're at mark 10. And so, you know, take a pencil or whatever and make a mark there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you... with a kingpin, you have to shoot 20 yards and 60 yards to get your tape. But, you know, let's say for like the Optimizer Ultra, you can shoot 20 and 40 mm-hmm. or 20 and 60. We prefer the 20-60 method because it's going to be the most accurate and it's going to spit out the exact tape number you need.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say we're going to do the 20 and 60 method. So you shoot 20 and that was mark 10. And then let's say you shoot 60 and you're at mark 50. So then you take mark 50 and subtract 10 from that, so then that gives you 40.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So then you go into your pre-printed yardage tapes and find tape number 40, peel it off the card, and then you just match up your 60-yard marks on the yardage tape and the setup tape, and then just wrap the tape around. And now on the Ultra, we have you sighted in from 20 all the way out to 80 yards by the individual yard.
Mm-hmm.
So then the Optimizer Light, it's the exact same process. So let's say you did the 20-40 method. The only thing that's different is you take whatever number you get, so you take 10 from... you know, say mark 10 was at 20 yards, but then say at 40 yards, you're at mark 20. So you just subtract the two and you get 10. Then you go to an actual chart that comes with the sight. and then it references, you find, you know, mark 10, and then it'll tell you you need tape 43 or whatever.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So we do the 20-40 method because not everybody has the luxury of shooting 6 yards, and not mm-hmm. everybody's capable of doing that.
Yep. Yeah.
So you can still get your tape. It's just, you know, there may be a little bit, you know, margin of error in there just because it's not the exact number. So right. if you can do the 20-60 method, that's the preferred.
But you can still get by with 24.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're still going to find your tape. It's just, you know, if it tells you you need tape 43, you may start shooting and realize, like, well, you know, I'm an inch high. So then you may have to go to the next tape.
Yeah.
So where if it, you know, the 20-60, it tells you exactly.
And they're, like, kind of in order.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're not going to have one tape that's close, that 43, and the other one that's closest is, you know, they're all... You can figure it out.
Yeah, and very rarely, like, I mean, we do run into instances where people will email us saying, I'm in between tapes. Like, you know, I put tape 43 on and I'm shooting high, and then I put tape 44 on and now I'm shooting low.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, what do I do? And it's, you know, you kind of have to...
You say, work on your anchor point and figure it out.
Well,
that's not our fault.
It's anchor point, son.
Yeah, well, that, or I mean, it's just like, I mean, it's an exact formula that our tapes are based out of, but it's, I mean, it's not... 100% exact.
Well,
you know?
Yeah,
so you do have to play with it sometimes, but 9 times out of 10, I mean, whatever tape we tell you, that's the legit tape. So, and on the Kingpin, you have to do the 20-60 method, but once you get your tape, now we'll sight you in from 20 all the way out to 100 by the yard. So, I mean, that was the one thing that was kind of a pain with single pins back in the day, was that when you got a single pin, you got the clear white piece of tape, which we still provide because some people still prefer just to do their own yardage tapes.
Down.
Yeah.
But
done that. I like it. It's not bad.
I mean, actually for the longest time, that's what I did because I was like, there's no way the yardage tapes are going to be accurate.
Yeah.
But they are. And, but I mean, you would spend all day out on the range, you know, trying to sight in your sight. Well, now literally in 15 minutes, we can have you sighted in from 20 to 80 or 20 to 100.
That's what I do.
That's the best when someone else does the work for you. I mean, that's
that's Steve's motto.
That's
right
how
there.
I live my life, man.
Well, when I got my a Hoyt Defiant, and I was with my buddy Tim Kitts at his place, and he helped me set it up.
Wasn't Tim supposed to be here?
You know, okay, we can talk about this because I meant to talk to Steve about this. Steve's like, yeah, Tim's going to be up at HHA when we're there.
Because that's what he told me.
Okay, well, Tim said something else. So I'm talking to Tim.
He did tell me, like, you let him know, like, yesterday.
Yeah.
No,
I called Tim Thursday, and I'm like, hey, we're going to AJHA tomorrow night. Oh, you guys are going for sure? Yeah, Steve said you were going to be there.
Yeah, that's
No, I said if you guys knew for sure what weekend you were going, that I could meet you guys down there. But, no, I didn't know. Steve just told me we were going, and he never got back a hold of me.
No, because when he was talking to me, he's like, oh, yeah. And I was like, it's this weekend. Oh, okay, cool.
Damn it, Steve.
There's always that weak link in every group.
Dude, yep. I'm the link that holds.
You're our
this
street
chain
bike Tommy.
Yeah.
Who? Yeah. You're our street bike Tommy.
You kind of look like him
from Nitro Circus.
Yeah, you kind of look just like him.
Do I?
Yeah,
yeah, you do.
Is that good?
Yeah, I mean that dude's pretty crazy. So.
He's just got more skills and he's a little more charming than you. But he's
way more popular than you.
Oh yeah, he's got way more Twitter followers.
How do you have a self-esteem hanging out with us, Steve? Sometimes I'm just like, man, we're hard on you.
But he likes it.
I thrive on negativity. Misery loves company. So.
Where were we going? What were we talking about?
I don't even know.
The sights.
Yeah, we were talking the sights, and then you guys decided to bash me for no reason. You guys are big meanies.
Yeah, anyway.
We do it all the time.
What's that
Mark? Side tapes in the 20 and 60 yards.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Mark.
Tim Kitts.
At least Mark's paying attention.
Yeah, yeah. Mark's kind of our facilitator here.
Uncle Mark.
I set up my Defiant with Tim, which should be here. And
we love you, Tim.
Yeah, I had my sight in. Ready to rock out to 60 in probably 15 minutes.
Yeah,
I just walked back. I started at 20. I just went back by 10-yard increments, and it was dead on.
Yeah, and I mean, kind of the beauty, too. So, like, we also offer our optimizer speed dial for the crossbows, and you sight that in the exact same way. And once you find your tape number for the speed dial, we have you sighted in from 20 to 100 yards with that. And that, because there's less variation with speeds and crossbows, we actually give you a chart. And if you can find out, like, you know, say you're shooting, you know, at 10 point, that's 360 feet per second or whatever.
Yeah.
If you know the feet per second, we can actually kind of give you an idea where to start when you're shooting it. Because with the speed dial, you have to do the 20 and 60 method.
Yeah.
So if you want, you can go 20, 30, 40, 50, 60. Or we'll kind of tell you, like, hey, if your bow is 360 feet per second, just start at mark 55, and then you may have to adjust slightly from there. But we at least kind of give you a start. It's just, I wish we could do that with you know, the compounds, but it's just you can get way more different variations.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, poundage and arrows and all
that. Yeah, that crossbow setup is awesome. It's wicked. I like that a lot.
It is super, super cool. So, and the beauty is, I mean, if you get the speed dial, I mean, you can either use a single reticle scope or a multi-reticle scope. Mm-hmm. And then if you use a multi-reticle scope, you just use the top crosshair. But, I mean, it's pretty wicked. So, I mean, it's just, we call it the range dial shoot because, I mean, you get the exact yardage, turn the dial to whatever, and poof,
shoot. Yeah, it's at 42 yards or 50, whatever. Yep.
So that's really, and I mean, it's just, I mean, with crossbows nowadays, I mean, they're pretty amazing.
They scare me a little bit.
Yeah. They're kind of intimidating. I don't know. There's so much power in those things.
I see guys get their thumbs almost ripped off by having their thumb up on the rail and stuff.
Yeah, you do that one time, you'll never do it again.
Well, yeah, you tend to remember.
Well, because you won't have another opportunity because he ain't gonna have a thumb to do it again.
I guess you could look at me like, well, I don't have to worry about doing that anymore.
Exactly. I got a perfect wrist.
But one thing we're pretty excited about with the speed dial because that's been out for probably going on 10 years now too, and we partnered with Vortex Optics for 2017, which, you know, another Wisconsin company, and, you know, they kind of have the same mentality and business model as us, and they're great people and company. So we partnered with them and now offering a speed dial and Vortex scope package, which will be available for 2017. So that should really help kind of,
that's awesome,
you know, promote the speed dial a little bit more, because I mean, obviously they have a huge following, so
yeah,
help support the cheese curd state.
Oh yeah, yeah, just support our cheese curd companies.
Oh yeah, man, you guys, they need all the help they can get up here apparently.
Wisconsin's a thriving area for hunting industry.
We were talking about that.
It's crazy.
It's amazing how many companies like are in Wisconsin and came from Wisconsin. So
yeah, because we're smack dab, like you were saying, center of Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Like everything's within a couple hours.
Yeah, we have Matthews. It's just an hour west of us. There's, you know, Predator Camo, which is an hour west of us. Vortex, an hour and a half from us. And, you know, there's plenty. The whole Faraday brands, I mean, those are 2 hours north of us. So, there's a lot of companies.
Yeah, I mean, Faraday's technically like, what, 14 companies now or something like that?
I don't even know what they're up to.
Crazy. Write down, you got everything you need, you know? So,
yep.
Well, it's cool. I wonder if the rest of them do everything in Wisconsin kind of like you guys. I would guess probably not, but maybe.
Yeah, I'm not sure. So,
not that it matters, but it's just giving you guys another point on the list there.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's the other thing, too, like kind of going forward is, you know, we have a really good relationship with Matthews and Vortex and stuff. And we just, I mean, not that we've had nothing against people that aren't in Wisconsin, but it's just, you know, keep it local.
They're close.
You know? Right. We love working with, you know, local companies and companies that have the same kind of mindset as we do, so it's a really good fit.
There's no reason if you live in Wisconsin you shouldn't have all those products. know, you should have an HHA if you don't.
Even Gearhead Archery is in Wisconsin, down in Prairie du Chien. The really, really short, tiny bowl that has the
Oh yeah,
they're out of out of Wisconsin too. Yeah, so
and we do a podcast tour.
Straight tour Wisconsin.
We want to do a week and just travel the state.
Yeah, we wouldn't be able to stop at every bar that we saw because that's a different thing that we didn't notice.
There's one in every corner.
It's cool. Yeah. We drove through a town of 300 and they had 9 bars.
Yep. What's a snowmobile thing?
It has to be. Is that really what it is?
I don't know. I mean, but I mean, if you bar hopped during snowmobile season, you'd be in trouble.
Yeah.
I think because it gets so cold in the wintertime and like we get so much snow, it's like, what else are you going to do?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, like everybody knows Wisconsin for, you know, cheese and beer. And it's God, and, you know, people from Wisconsin, they know how to drink. And it's like, well, when you have snow, you know, half the year, what else are you going to do?
Exactly.
I mean, like 2 years ago, we had like 52 straight days of sub-zero temperatures. So it's like, I mean, you make sure the refrigerator's stocked up and you literally do not leave your couch.
Well, it seems like you don't even need a fridge at that point, man.
What's the beer? You know, we do Busch Lattes, Busch Light, because we're Eric's Iowa, so he brings them all over from there. And then so Spotted Cow is like in Illinois and Iowa, so everyone's like, oh, you got to get Spotted Cow from Wisconsin because you can't get it anywhere in our – and it's probably illegal.
Yeah, we're not bringing it back across state lines for any of you guys wondering. We don't break the law, so –
But is it Leinenkugel, Spotted Cow? Is that like, that's what I just pictured?
Leine is the big one, yeah. Because, I mean, they're hour and a half north of us. So that's actually, my hometown is just, which is Eau Claire, is right there by the Leine Lodge. So
when I was a kid, a young boy, I stayed at one of the lower Eau Claire lakes. And then I went and saw the giant
It's pronounced Eau Claire, not Eau Claire.
Eau Claire? Yeah. Oh. What was I eating last night? Those are Eau Claire's, right?
I don't know.
What about X-Lite? Is that a big X-Lite?
X-Lite. I've never even heard of it.
No, I don't. Mark was talking about that yesterday on the way up. I'm like, I've never heard of X-Lite.
Yeah, we're not old enough, Mark.
Yeah, I did drink a Red Dog yesterday.
You did drink a Red Dog yesterday.
We showed up to Scott's last night, and sorry, Mark. Mark has no mic, so no one can hear him. We're sorry.
Sorry, Mark.
Steal Eric's. But, yeah, we showed up to your party, and right away I'm like, oh, we are way underdressed.
Yeah.
No, you were dressed appropriately. It's just, yeah, for some reason, I don't know why people were dressed up last night.
Yeah.
Jason showed up in a freaking suit.
I know.
Yeah.
Made us all look like idiots.
I know. I'm like, man, Mark's got like Reebok pants on.
Yeah. We look like we just drove 4 hours.
He was carrying one tall 24-ounce of Red Dog.
I didn't even know they still made Red Dog.
I didn't either. And then I saw it and I was like, really? And then I was all excited because we had to go out of town to go get some booze. We had to go outside city limits because it was past 10 o'clock at night, which is apparently a thing. It's kind of a different way of life up here. I mean,
Steve, I swear, the way you talk about, we're 4.5 hours away from home.
I know,
you swear he's having culture shock.
They got wolves and bears and stuff. It's nuts.
Like, he acts like we're in Australia or something.
Like, that's a four-hour drive.
Like, we're still in the same time zone, Steve.
Right, I know, but that's like a four-hour drive.
There's wolves up here. Oh, there's bears up here. It's like, God,
for like a wolf, dude,
wait,
like
that's,
a four-hour.
That's a real thing? Wolves and bears are real?
It's scary, man. It's a scary world we live in.
Do you freak out like if you see a cat like when you're hunting, like a kitty cat?
I actually got a cat on trail camera. I'll show you. It's really funny. But
the point that he
did, you carry a sidearm with you after that?
No, I thought about it.
Hey, Scott, we found out like a week ago they scare the dark, so we don't know how he gets.
Yeah, I am not afraid of the dark.
No. Okay, well, I mean that's actually, I'm terrified of the dark. So
are you really?
Dude, I hate walking out in the woods.
Really?
At night. Oh, really? It freaks me. My mind is like,
well, up here, yeah, it's a little bit different story.
Like I hear because I mean, a lot of places you hunt, you know, you got to wait till it's blackout, you know, so you don't blow the field out and stuff. And
yeah, yeah.
When I'm walking out, I'm like running. I'm like, really? I don't want to know what's behind me. I want to get the heck out of here and get back to my truck.
That's
and
so funny.
You need to get a bicycle.
Yeah, one of those Rambo bikes.
Or the Quiet Cat or whatever they are. Yeah.
We talked about that because one guy that we know that used to work with Steve's like, doesn't he just seem like the type of dude that's scared of the dark? And I'm like, oh, yeah, he does.
You know what? It's not that I'm not afraid of the dark.
It's what's in the dark.
Well, like, and I just, you know, like, you know, like around here, I mean, like, yeah, I mean, there's wolves and bears and stuff, which that's fine. You know, like, I grew up around those kinds of animals, but it's just, I don't know, like, your mind just plays games with you.
I think it's all mindset.
It is. It is all. Because, like, especially if you have a long walk, you know, and,
right,
like, you're just, like, walking and then you hear a twig break, you're like, yep, it's Sasquatch. He's going to kill me.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, but I've had stuff like make me jump walking in, like, oh, what's that? Oh, it's like a raccoon, just or whatever.
Well, and the worst is like when you blow a deer out and they go like pounding through the woods, and you're like, oh my God.
I think the worst is a turkey coming off a roost.
Oh, yeah.
And then when it's still dark out there.
I mean, I've gotten punked out by a squirrel before. Like, there was a squirrel that was like looking at me, like barking, like not running away. And like, that freaked me out.
Those red squirrels, man, those things scare me because you never know what they're going to do.
Yeah, because you're like,
they get that crazy look in their eye, like, dude, I could just go right for your jugular right now, and there's nothing you can do.
Anything that small willing to stand up to something that big knows something that I don't know.
Exactly.
Like that, I punked out. I was like, I was talking.
Yeah. When's the last time someone got attacked by like a bear or a wolf up here? Just to rub it a little more salt in Steve's wounds.
Honestly, I don't know if there's ever been a registered wolf attack in Wisconsin.
Yeah,
I mean, they eat people's dogs all the time. I mean, they get, especially like guys that run bear dogs.
Yeah.
I mean, wolves tear those things apart. I mean, that's like a smorgasbord for them.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's nasty. I mean, if you ever see a dog that got, you know, just that mangled, got taken by a wolf, I mean, when you find them, there's literally the collar laying there.
That's so you can't hunt them at all in Wisconsin?
No, I don't know what the, a couple years ago, they did have a season for them. But I mean, the thing with the wolves is, I mean, they're awesome, awesome animals, and I mean, they're kind of like an iconic animal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they just, I mean, they do devastating things to the deer herd and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, but the problem is, they keep delisting them from the endangered species list, and then they'll put them back on, and then they'll take them off, and they put them back on. But I mean, I don't know if there's actually been an actual wolf season since, you know, a couple years ago. But I mean, the one thing in the Wisconsin DNR, I mean, they have started, you know, doing stuff to, you know, try to thin the herd and, you know, with
kind of acknowledge there's a problem.
Yeah. Well, and especially because, I mean, like you look at the northern part of the state, you know, you can't even shoot a doe anymore because the deer population is so, you know, diminished. And a lot of that was due to wolves and bears and then certain antlerless seasons that we had. But, you know, it's starting to bounce back, and you know, the wolves are starting to kind of move out of areas that, you know, they've been stationed in for the last 10 years or whatever. And So
did you guys get hit with any like heart diseases up here or anything the last couple of years?
Our big thing, it's not, I mean, it's still around, but, I mean, I can remember like when I was in high school, the big thing was CWD.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So that's when a lot of population, practices that came in with like Ernebuck and antlerless, right. You know, stuff like that.
Yep.
And so, I mean, that obviously had a, you know, a huge effect on the deer herd and stuff. But, I mean, that's...
You guys got a lot of water.
Don't they say
here,
cold
though,
weather too? Helps prevent some of that? I mean, I don't know. I'm not a biologist. Sure. But I thought they say, like, you know, once the first hard frost hits, you can kind of quit worrying as much about...
I don't think...
Well, it kills everything. Like, all the bacteria and everything the first...
Yeah, I don't
frost,
know.
I guess.
I don't know about it. I probably shouldn't even talk about it since I don't know much. But.
Yeah, and that's, I mean...
Well, I do that each and every week.
It's crazy. Just Google it.
Yeah.
Yep.
But, so yeah, I mean, that's still, cause like now, you know, like I grew up hunting over corn piles, you know, and right. So like now certain zones you can still bait, but I mean, there are baiting restrictions, but like our area around here, we can't because they found CWD in the neighboring county. Mm. So like any counting where there's CWD found, all the neighboring counties are, you know, affected by it. So it's still out there, but it's not like, you know, when it first came to light.
Yeah, it was a huge deal.
I mean, you thought like the world was coming to an end. Right. It's like everybody was talking about it, and it's still. I mean, it's still out there, but you know.
My kind of theory on that is like I don't know if baiting really even makes a difference because if one deer gets it, they live with each other. Like you know what I mean? They're always around each other. If one gets it, they're gonna get it.
Right.
I don't think it matters if there's. I mean, maybe the argument would be like it's gonna pull them to a central location where that feed is, and maybe they wouldn't have crossed paths because of the bait pot, you know.
But I mean, the thing is, like, so I mean, what if they're feeding in an egg field? I mean, they're still gonna be all together, you know.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Or you know, a food plot, you know, that you planted. So, it is
what it is.
Yeah, it's interesting.
We've never done that before, you know. We can't bait.
Yeah, and, well,
where we're from, so it's
in
kind
Iowa,
of a,
you can right, but not you can't no, hunt you, and bait. You can. Put like mineral and something.
You can put mineral out, yep. But
see, we can't even do that here.
At it's all? Gotta, it's got to be out 30 days before.
It's got to be like 100 yards from a tree stand or something? 100
yards from a tree stand, and you got to like, at that 30 days, you're supposed to dig the dirt out.
I love the fact that we're like such diehard hunters, but we don't even really know what the regulations are.
Something, like something close to that.
I mean, it's, you
we're
know,
if shooting
you,
ourselves in the foot. Yeah, the DNR officers going, oh, these rednecks from Sherrar that just drink.
I know. I can't wait till the emails I get on Monday. Like, what the hell are you talking about?
I mean, it's, you know,
you don't know anything.
Don't associate with those guys, man.
Yeah. I mean, it's really hard to know each and every regulation. I mean, you know, there's so many that go on each and every year.
And they change every year,
well,
too.
Well, let's be honest, a lot of them are bullshit. A lot of them are. But a lot of them are necessary. Necessary though too. I'm not saying they all are, but there's a lot of ones that's like why. Like Illinois just made it to where now you can bow hunt during firearm season if you're on private ground and have a valid permit for firearm season.
Firearm permit.
I really wish I would have known that.
Well, you would have had to have. Did you have a firearm permit for?
Yeah.
Yeah, you could have bow hunted. This is the first year in.
That's what I get for now.
They just changed it
like that week.
They changed it like 2 months before season,
you know what they need to do? They need to just like, I mean, one thing is the freaking regulation books are like 20 pages long.
Oh, yeah.
And it's in like size 6 font, you know? And then even if you're trying to read it like on your smartphone, like you get almost motion sickness.
There needs to be like a new key points like section.
Like Wisconsin did that, I guess is kind of cool, but not cool. Like Wisconsin, we were always known for, you know, the license plate back tags. We had to wear these huge back tags. And everybody made fun of us for it. But like now we don't. So like you just buy your license online and then like they can scan your driver's license and it shows every license you bought.
Right.
But like, really? So like we don't. And the other thing is like when you kill the deer, you actually had to go to like a gas station or a registration station to register the deer.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
really?
That was awesome because like during rifle season, you know, you show up to the registration station to see like what people killed, and it was almost like a
kind of like deer camp.
Yeah, and now nobody does that. And
yeah,
I kind of miss the big back tags. Right. You know, it feels weird not having that. And I mean, it's super convenient now. You kill a deer, you just get on your smartphone and
call it in,
go online and do it right
there. Illinois used to be the check stations during first and second firearm season. It was kind of the big deal. Like I hunted Fulton County for years. And it was like, okay, let's go to the check station, see what all the big bucks went down today. And I guess there was a biologist there, someone from like universities that would like roughly age the deer and stuff like that.
That's
and,
cool.
Yeah.
And you get your little deer pen. Did Wisconsin ever do that with the pens?
Yeah.
See, we never. I didn't even know about that until I started hanging out with you guys. Like, I didn't even know that was a thing.
That's like a classic Illinois thing. Mm-hmm. You know, kill a deer in Illinois,
been doing
you
it
get
forever,
your
right?
hat pen and
yeah.
But I don't.
Yeah,
I don't have an Illinois deer pin.
You ever killed a deer in Illinois?
Long time ago.
You can get one. You can order it. You can be part
of
the club.
$5. Yeah, you can go back.
I'm gonna buy like 50 of them.
You could.
It was the memory.
Yeah. For every time I sat and didn't see a deer, I'm gonna.
I want a pin.
Yeah.
Put them all in your hat.
That way, when like next time I'm in Illinois, everybody's gonna be like, "Oh my god, that guy's like totally legit." Right.
Yeah.
Well, you go to like the Illinois Deer Classic, and you'll see one old timer with like an old like NRA trucker hat, mm-hmm. and he's just got like 55 of them all over his hat.
Yeah.
He's just proud.
That's like I need to hang out with that guy.
Oh yeah.
It's classic.
He knows how to kill deer.
Yeah.
It's just classic deer hunting stuff, man. It's all over. There's examples of it everywhere. It's just,
you know, that's like the other thing we always like joke about here, because it's like, I mean, we're such like huge hunters and we work for this archery company, but yet every year none of us kill anything. Actually, this year I think was like the first year Chris, one of the owners, he killed two does, and we were all like freaking out about
it. Did you have
like
a party and everything?
Yeah, we're like, finally, like somebody killed something. But like, so it kind of sucks because like within the company we have our machine shop and then we have the office, and because they're separate we don't get to spend a lot of time together.
Yeah.
But like our machine shop guys are just killers, man. And like, really? Every time I go there they're like, "You kill anything yet?" I'm like, "No, how about you?" And they're like, "Oh yeah, I've killed like 10 I'm like, you guys should probably be doing all the sales and marketing instead of me, because yeah. I suck at hunting.
Hey, there's a podcast coming up. You guys want to sit in on that? But yeah. You were texting me when you were in Illinois. You're like, dude, sit slow.
I was about ready to blow my brains out.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you went to Kansas. And I'm like, Kansas probably be good. Mm-hmm. Text me in a few days. They're like, nah, Kansas is.
Kurt kept feeding me false hope. He's like, just keep at it, man. I'm like, okay. And I'm like, your encouragement is bullcrap, Kurt.
It was like first week of November. It didn't help. Like, I had shot a deer. I had shot a buck.
I was on my way to Illinois when you texted me, and you're like, just killed it this morning. I'm like, oh man, this week's gonna be awesome.
Right.
And it wasn't.
Well, yeah, just if it makes it feel any better. I saw one 2-year-old chasing a doe the next morning, and then I haven't seen a deer since that. Yeah. So it's been over a month.
I don't feel sorry for you at all.
No. Hey.
You see this right here? It's the world's tiniest violin.
Oh, yeah. Okay. He's playing Devil Went Down to Tiniest Georgia.
Yeah.
The littlest devil.
Yeah. I've had a good season. I didn't see a lot of deer, but I just seen the right deer.
That's all that matters.
You know? See, I've seen a lot of deer, not the right one.
That's exactly. No matter where I went, like I had an awesome fall as far as like the amount of time I got to spend in the woods, which is right. Awesome, but it was the most demoralizing fall I've ever had. Because, I mean, I legitimately had 6 tags in my pocket this year, and I still have 6 tags in my pocket.
Well,
I have one and still have one.
I hate to say this to you, and you're going to just tell me to shut my mouth. You kind of have to have those seasons every once in a while.
Oh, shut up.
Shut your mouth.
Shut your mouth. Yeah. Shut your dirty mouth.
All right. So this concludes this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, I'm not the worst one on the podcast this week. Yeah. Awesome.
No, you do though. I mean, it's yeah.
Oh,
I mean,
I am.
But
the
I mean
worst
that one. That I mean that's it. Just makes you want it that much more.
Yeah, I had 2 seasons like that in a row, and I'm like, I forgot how to kill deer. I'm like, it'll never happen again.
But it's legitimately been. I mean, I can't. I mean, I'm sure if I thought hard about it, which I don't feel like doing right now, I mean, I could.
Remember. I don't feel like putting that much effort into this.
I don't even remember. Like, I mean, it's been a couple of years since I killed a deer with my bow, but, you know, at the same time, I mean, I kind of fell into the whole, you know, trophy hunting thing for a while.
Right.
Yeah. But, I mean, that was even the worst part this year is I was just going for meat, like, and I couldn't even kill a doe. Ah, well, that's not true. I could have. I kept thinking, like, if I shoot this doe, there's going to be a big one behind her, and I'm going to screw that up. And but, yeah.
It's always in the back of your mind.
Yeah. Well, it was funny because, I mean, on my way home from Kansas, I was texting you, and I'm like, "Yep, I'm ready to hang it up. I'm going to take a week off." And like, I took our Wisconsin rifle season off just because I was beat, and it's like, mm-hmm. I should probably get some work done around the house and stuff. And I was sitting there, and it was just like killing me not to go out. And I'm like, "Just take, but you just need some time."
You feel guilty a little bit,
yeah. Right. But now, like, I go out, and I'm like, I'm still not seeing deer. Like, all right, maybe it's just time to, you know.
Yeah,
call it a season. Yeah,
but what it is in the off season, you're like, man, I wish I could go hunting right now. And then you're like, oh, remember when it was hunting season and you didn't go hunting?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, right. I have like a weird inner guilt. Like if I don't go, I'm like, I find myself sometimes trying to talk myself out of going.
I always say you can't kill a big one if you're not out there.
Mm-hmm.
But then I totally tell myself, well, you can't kill a big one if there's not a big one there. So all right, yeah. I'm gonna go sit on the couch and watch TV.
Yeah, because then most of the time when you go, you don't see anything. But when you don't go, you're like.
He
should have went. I should have went.
Walking right by my stand right now. Yep. And the worst is when you go and check your cameras.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Like, and their big one walked by.
They always do it on Thursday. I had a Nice giant. Yeah, it was. It's always Thursday.
It's always during the week. It's always during the week.
I saw this. I was like, I was flipping their cameras on this property. I've never seen big deer, and I see this. I was like, oh my god! And I look at the time, and it was like Thursday at like 6:45. He's like 50 yards from my stand, walking towards it. I'm like, are you serious? It's just.
Well, that was that. Honestly, that was the worst thing because last weekend I was thinking about going down to Illinois for the. Last weekend of the firearm and mm-hmm. trying to get one with my muzzleloader, I ended up not being able to go, and it was killing me because I'm like, they got like this all the snow, and it was just like perfect temps and stuff. Yep. And I'm like, ah, whatever, you know. And I have a couple of the wireless cameras down there, you know, that send the pictures to your phone.
Yeah, no,
and
no.
It was Friday at 4:15. I was sitting at my desk here at the office, and my phone goes off, and here it was like one of our number one hitless bucks out on a food plot at 4:15.
Do not perfect do that to yourself. I'm just like, do not
those,
do that.
Honestly, those wireless cameras are the worst thing ever invented because mean, I spend more time looking at, like, every morning.
You go through them?
Yeah. I like get up before my alarm, run downstairs, and check my phone, and I'm like, wait.
You keep your phone downstairs?
Yeah.
You don't have it right next to you?
No.
You're weird.
No,
that's not normal.
I wanted to get a couple of those, but I feel like I'd be in the same boat. It'd probably drive me nuts.
It's totally new addiction.
I feel like I'd get, like what you said, I'd get nothing done. I'd probably get fired from my job because every time my phone went off, I'd be like, you know, freaking out, trying to take time off to go and all that. And
well, that
but then you just feel worse about yourself because then you're like, oh, I should have been in a stand, but and you're looking at
you know what? Knowing me, I still wouldn't even get no one texts me, no one calls me. I probably wouldn't even get pictures on there.
Like, your own cameras wouldn't even text you.
Sad Steve.
Well, like the thing. Like the other thing is too is like, you know, every time you set up a camera, you always get that one weed that you miss.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Then the worst is when they're in front of one a wireless camera and you get up in the morning, there's like 50 pictures. You can always... You're like, oh my god, and then you check it, you're like, son of a, and you're 4.5 hours away and you can't do anything about it.
You can always tell it too, like when you go and check them, you know, you flip the screen down and it says like 3,200 pictures and you're like, oh,
card full.
There's weeds in there somewhere.
Yeah. That or it's like the same raccoon sitting there like licking himself or whatever like in front of your camera forever.
That always is the case. There's always like 55 of them. There's just always like hanging
out. Raccoons are always center frame. But I think that the raccoons are actually the raccoons from Guardians of the Galaxy and they're just messing with us. Because every time I go check, if I got like raccoons that run around.
The sad thing is I do know what he's talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Dude, they're always center camera. It's like, how are you like
but you can never get a big buck to like center camera.
Right. Yeah, right.
But everything you don't want pictures of are like perfect, like photo, like album quality. And but then every deer picture, it's like you get a giant and it's blurry. Or, you know.
So I got a question for you guys since you guys are scared of the dark.
It's not the dark. It's just the things in the dark.
What about, I mean, this is stupid, but I'm going to ask it anyway. The fake, I don't know if they're fake. Most of them are fake. The eerie trail cameras that people put online.
Those freak me out.
Does it freak you out? Yeah. Steve, that for sure freaks you out.
Dude, I'm like, there's a couple that I look at that I'm like, no way. But then there's ones that I'm like, ooh, that looks too real.
If I ever had a buddy try to like punk me like that, you know, put on like a Scream costume, whatever, walk by my camera. If I ever found out like who that was, I would beat the living crap out of him. Do not do that.
Dude, the only one that ever creeped me out, and it was like a video, like I don't, it was probably like staged, like someone just did it to get like views, but it was like a bum, like being all weird walking through the timber.
No, did you remember like recently that whole clown deal?
Yeah.
There was one, like it went viral. It was a guy bull hunting and there was a dude in a clown outfit walking towards him with a huge knife.
And
the dude legitimately was like, The clown was walking towards a stand and he's filming with his phone and he finally puts his phone down and is like comes to full draw and is like, I'm gonna shoot you if you don't like
I remember walk that video.
Away.
It was huge. Yeah.
But like I totally would have put an arrow through him. just for dressing up as a clown. Right. Like, why would you even want to dress up as a clown?
And walk
no offense to clowns, like professional clowns. I mean,
they ruin careers there.
I know.
Lost their jobs.
If I was like a real clown, I would totally start like a clown, yeah, like
clown union.
Just like hire a couple of hit guys to take out.
Oh
posers,
yeah,
you know,
get rid of those scab clowns.
Yeah.
That kind of fell off real quick, the whole clown thing. Because I always thought about that. Like if I'm in the woods and someone like sees my truck, like you know, like an antler hunter or something, like sees like, oh yeah, the working class bow hunter guy, I got the sticker on his truck. Let's go mess with them.
Mm-hmm. Hey, clowns, real clowns don't let other clowns cross those unlimited handkerchief lines. Instead of a picket line.
Let's just let
it. No, when they keep pulling it out. No, all right, man, that joke died.
Was that a serious joke?
I don't know.
I don't know. I had it in my mind what it was going to sound like, and it did not work.
Did you see him before that? He was laughing his ass off. He's like,
he's all pumped about it.
I was like, this is going to be the stupidest thing I say all day, and I'm glad I get it out of the way early.
It's a good thing we don't do video podcasts because no one would listen or watch.
No.
No.
Yeah, they would.
I have a feeling nobody's even going to listen to this podcast.
Probably not.
No, probably not.
Probably not. Zero downloads.
I'm pretty sure they like they stopped listening by now.
Oh, yeah. We're an hour and 11 minutes in, and we're good, though. We're solid. Should we end it here? We'll come back.
I feel the content is getting pretty weak.
Getting negative. Steve brought it down with that joke.
I think Elliot fell asleep.
Yeah, he did. He's
sleeping on taking a nap.
Mark says it's time. He's like, yep, shut her down, boys.
Yeah. He's like, why did I even come up here with
Uncle
these
Mark?
Clones?
Uncle Mark says, you're done.
All right, guys, we're going to wrap it up. You know what to do. Go shoot your bow. Thanks.